one of the fun things that happened this weekend was Congress has refused to officially kick the military off of Twitch. So what we've got here is AOC had an amendment to a bill saying that the military can't recruit using Twitch. And so Congress debated on Thursday whether to end the military's use of esports teams to recruit teenagers following a Nation report published 2 weeks ago about the practice. Shortly after the publication, AOC introduced an amendment to the defense spending bill that would bar the use of funds on military recruiting by any of the armed forces for our esports activities. I believe that we should act with reservation and caution first, rather than entering with both feet in and then trying to undo damage that could potentially be done. So, she tweeted, imagine trying to explain to your colleagues who are members of Congress what Twitch is. So, she was frustrated. No one really knew what was going on. And so, her comments on colleagues' misunderstanding of the issue are perfectly encapsulated by a statement Representative Max Rose of New York gave to the New York Post. This is incredibly insulting, as it perpetuates the limousine liberal trope that soldiers are idiots who only get duped into enlisting. Yeah, but which is not what this is about at all. But even without passage of the amendment, the military's online recruitment efforts have been curtailed. So this is great. A day after this article's publication, Twitch told the Army that it must immediately stop using deceptive giveaways to collect personal information. After the Army booted me, the author, from its Twitch channel for mentioning U.S. war crimes, First Amendment lawyers also started speaking out, arguing that banning constituted a violation of free speech rights. The Knights First Amendment Institute at Columbia University even sent a letter to the Army and Navy demanding an end to speech prohibitions. So, the Army and Navy esports team's banning of users based on their speech about war crimes is unconstitutional, and goes on about that. The funny part, or the cool part, whatever, however you want to look at it, is under a barrage of negative press, the Army quietly retreated from Twitch and opted out of future competitions. The Army esports team's social media accounts went dark. There's no official time frame for a return to Twitch, according to one report. But industry insiders told me they suspect this will last through spring 2021. The Navy esports team, in contrast, hasn't stopped. Its recruiters admitted that they block unfavorable terms, like Eddie Gallagher, Navy SEAL accused of war crimes. One recruiter lied to viewers, saying military esports channels were not a recruiting tool. So, yeah, the article goes on and on, like, basically giving a little more analysis of what happens. But the amendment didn't pass, so sad there. But you can read the full story over there at The Nation. They've got lots of news. So, some more U.S. news that's kind of fun. Shout out to Caveman. Haven't seen you before. Welcome to the com. And SMJ, glad you're listening. So, check this out. This happened in Bethlehem Township, Pennsylvania. And this is a great instance of a white guy getting the benefit of the doubt. Man fires AK-47 at police officers after refusing to wear a mask. When a cigar shop clerk told Adam Zabrowski on Friday that he had to wear a mask in the shop, the 35-year-old angrily refused. Instead, he grabbed two stogies, stormed outside, and then pulled a handgun and shot at the clerk. The next day, cornered near his home, Zabrowski allegedly fired at police with an AK-47, sparking a wild shootout with at least seven officers that ended with him shot multiple times and under arrest. The case is the latest violent incident tied to arguments over mandatory masks, but Zabrowski's reaction was driven by his own this is where we suddenly, the narrative suddenly gets so sympathetic to this guy, when in any other case it would not be so. But anyway, the thing was is that this guy had a gun and an AK-47 and shot at police and isn't dead. But here's where they're spinning. They're saying he wasn't just dealing with the loss of his job, the loss of his child. He just wasn't dealing well with the loss of his job, the loss of his child, just not handling the pandemic well. While noting those factors did not justify his violent conduct, I think he was just getting stretched too tight. So, that's sad news, but it is not news involving coronavirus yet. Don't worry, we'll get there. This is from theindependent.co.uk if you want to read more about this guy's story. Just be heads up, it has some like subtle biases in it that I didn't like. So this is from All Sides, and this is about the U.S. and immigration. So on Friday, the Department of Homeland Security said it would increase fees for dozens of immigration and work applications, including an 81% increase on naturalization applications and a first-time fee for asylum applicants. The fee to claim asylum from within the United States is now $50, and the online naturalization applications increased from $640 to $1,160. According to DHS's statement, the naturalization fee will represent the full cost to process the application and a proportional share of overhead costs. The $275 renewal fee for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program was removed. The changes will take effect October 2nd. So the All Sides take here is just coverage from all sides of the political spectrum highlighted U.S. citizenship and immigration services budget deficit and the fact that they receive most of their funding from fee collection. So no surprise there. Essential services in the U.S. are funded by fees, and tax breaks and refunds are funded by other people's taxes. The point taken from the left is U.S. to raise national application fees by 500, and the headline from the right was Trump administration to increase immigration fees and impose fee for asylum claims. So, again, what's neat, whenever one of the things I like about All Sides is you get both sides, and whenever there's something that's just kind of like a statement of fact, you can kind of tell because both sides, both Fox News and MSNBC basically have the same story. So, anyway. Some more racial injustice news. And this is kind of coronavirus related. See, we're almost into coronavirus news time. And this is from ProPublica, Illinois. So Grace, a black teen jailed for not doing her online coursework, is released. So Grace's story, first published by ProPublica, Illinois, prompted outrage and debate across the country. Though a judge refused to set the girl free, the Michigan Court of Appeals ordered her immediate release from a juvenile detention facility in Detroit. A teenager who has been detained since mid-May after not doing her online schoolwork was set free on Friday after the Michigan Court of Appeals ordered her immediate release from a juvenile facility in suburban Detroit. Grace, a high school sophomore, spent 78 days at the Children's Village after an Oakland... What a great name for a prison. Children's Village. After an Oakland County family court judge found she had violated her probation on earlier charges of assault and theft. Friday's decision comes a week after that judge denied her lawyer's request to set her free. The lawyer then asked the appellate court to release her. Within 2 hours of the court order, shortly after 5 p.m., Grace left the facility after her mother arrived to get her. She had her bags ready to go. They jumped in the car and they were gone, said one of Grace's attorneys. They were definitely emotional and happy. So you can read more about this, like I said, on ProPublica. But it's a pretty amazing story, and it highlights some of the systemic racism that exists in the United States. Alrighty. Hello, X1. Welcome. Now, The Guardian has a little lighter fare, and The Guardian and The Independent both had this story, and I thought it was kind of neat. It's probably all over the place. But Americans and Canadians were getting packages of seeds from China that they didn't order. Hundreds of Americans. So let's read this. This is The Guardian's take. Americans have been planting mystery seeds, which appeared to be sent from China, unaware... that's not true. I'm going to read this other one. The mysterious seed packs from China that hundreds of Americans received in the mail have been identified, according to the USDA. Federal officials warned those who received the seeds not to plant them over fears that some may be invasive species and could destroy native plants and insects. Osama El-Lissi, a member of the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, said officials had identified more than a dozen plant species included in the seed packet. "We've identified 14 different species of seeds, including mustard, cabbage, morning glory, and some herbs, like mint, sage, rosemary, lavender, and then other seeds like hibiscus and roses," he said. Authorities believe that the seeds may be part of an online money-making scam that originated in China. "This time, we don't have any evidence indicating this is something other than a brushing scam, where people receive unsolicited items from a seller, then post false customer reviews to boost sales." The USDA is working with DHS to investigate the packages. Packages were also mailed across Canada. Most of the packets appear, according to the address labels, to have come from Chinese city of Suzhou. A spokesman for the Chinese Foreign Ministry said last week that Chinese mail service was working with the U.S. Postal Service to have some of the packages shipped back to China for analysis. So, pretty neat. Don't plant strange seeds you get from foreign countries, because they might be invasive species. But at the same time, be careful, because, anytime you get a package you didn't expect, you're either about to become the main character in a really weird story, or it's something else is going to happen. You never know. Well, I think that's all the domestic news I'm going to bother with. It was just, it's too much. Let's play a song. This is called Cool for a Second by Yumi Zuma, and it's off of the Truth or Consequences album. So that song goes on for another minute, but we're going to run out of time. There's so much news. There's been a whole weekend of events going on, so we got to get back into it. Of course, world news. It's now time for world news. And welcome, Harry Larry. Welcome back. So in the world, we've got a couple of stories, obviously. France 24 is reporting former Pope Benedict the 16th. Yes, Pope Benedict is extremely frail, says German newspaper. So the former pope became seriously ill himself after visiting his sick brother in Germany in June and is extremely frail, according to a report in the Monday edition of the German Passauer Neue Presse newspaper. Benedict's 93 and is suffering from erysipelas of the face, a virus that causes a face rash and episodes of severe pain, citing the former pope's biographer Peter Seewald. Now, erysipelas, what I thought was neat about this when I was looking into it is its alternative name or common name is Saint Anthony's Fire. So I thought that was kind of interesting, given that he's a Catholic figure. So Benedict visits sick brother George in Germany in June, making his first trip out of Italy since his shock resignation in 2013. George died just 2 weeks later, age 96. So, good luck. Hope he gets better, but that's going on there. We got some Sri Lankan news. Socialist Sri Lankan news. I wish I had a sound effect for that. The Socialist Equality Party calls on workers young and the poor to vote for candidates in Sri Lanka's national elections on Wednesday. The party is fielding a total of 43 candidates in Colombo, Jaffna, and Nuwara Eliya districts. The SEP is the only party fighting for a unified movement of the working class across ethnic lines on a socialist and internationalist program in response to the COVID-19 pandemic and the rising danger of dictatorship and imperialist war. And you can totally dig into that more and more at WSWS.org. It's Whiskey Sierra, WhiskeySierra.org. So now let's get into some COVID stuff. You can't avoid it. It's going to be in the headlines everywhere. So The Guardian's reporting, survivors of COVID-19 show increased rate of psychiatric disorders. Researchers found more than half experienced PTSD, anxiety, insomnia, depression, or compulsive symptoms. So here's the actual text of the story. More than half of the people who received hospital treatment for COVID-19 were found to be suffering from a psychiatric disorder a month later. Out of 402 patients monitored after being treated for the virus, 55% were found to have at least one psychiatric disorder, experts from San Rafael Hospital in Milan found. The results, based on clinical interviews and self-assessment questionnaires, showed post-traumatic stress disorder in 28% of cases, depression in 31%, and anxiety in 42%. Additionally, 40% of patients had insomnia and 20% had obsessive-compulsive symptoms. The findings will increase concerns about the psychological effects of the virus. The paper published on Monday in the journal Brain, Behavior, and Immunity, author says PTSD, major depression, and anxiety are all high-burden, non-communicable conditions associated with years of life lived with disability. So, you can catch that at The Guardian, but that's pretty much the whole story. So, if you do go to the hospital for COVID, you may have some psychological problems. But don't worry, because there's death. You could die, too. Workers, this is from In These Times, workers blow the whistle on mass death. So in the United States, unlike the most of the world, we primarily have just all for-profit health care. So that's why we famously have so much expensive health care. But here's the story. As the coronavirus continues to batter the U.S., the horror stories still sound the same. Basic medical supplies nowhere to be found, new patients keep showing up gasping for air, nurses with impossible workloads and back-to-back-to-back shifts, hospital staff with inadequate PPE, getting sick. It might even sound like no one with any power in American healthcare has learned much since March, but that's not true. According to Salim Sutaria, chief operating officer of Tenet Healthcare, a massive for-profit hospital chain, we've learned a tremendous amount. Sutaria boasted to Wall Street and analysts during a conference call in mid-June, talking about how to limit COVID-19 costs on a unit basis of managing. Yeah, so they're not learning how to treat the disease, they're learning how to treat the disease cheaper. Or maybe not. Here's the story picks up here. Of course, hospitals can lower their costs in a lot of ways that make patient care worse. Tenet, for example, furloughed 10% of its staff in March and April. It stopped contributing to 401ks, rationed PPE, and threatened to fire employees who bought their own, and slashed hours for its nurses. Some nurses were sent home mid-shift, leaving other sections as big as 20 patients. At a hospital in Massachusetts, nurses filed more than 50 reports over 2 weeks in April, documenting specific instances of how downsizing jeopardized patients. One declared she had never been more ashamed to work somewhere. Tenet's pandemic management style has been especially harrowing at Detroit Medical Center. With 2,000 beds and the city's biggest employer, nearly 3,000 people have died from COVID-19 in Wayne County, where Detroit is. Meanwhile, a lawsuit filed by four former DMC nurses claimed that at one point, DMC was so short-staffed that a staggering number of deceased were in rigor mortis before anyone noticed they weren't breathing. The staffers allege hospital administrators actively increased the death toll by instructing nurses not to revive patients suspected of having COVID-19. As bodies piled up, DMC ran out of space for body bags, then ran out of body bags. When a group of overnight nurses showed up early for their shift to plead with their bosses for reinforcements, either from outside the hospital or among 1,500 staffers the system had laid off over the past few years, tenant officials instead sent them home. The day staff then worked a 25-hour shift. So yeah, so if you're in healthcare, you can be compelled to work extra shifts, and you can be compelled to work more than 24 hours. So yeah, it's great whenever a for-profit entity also has the backing of the government. The story just goes on detailing all sorts of horrors that are going on because healthcare is this for-profit company doesn't have any liability. You know, I think this sounds a lot like, as I was reading that, it sounds a lot like a grumpy Marcus. We're going to play a song. We're going to play some Beatles. We're going to play Let It Be for a 2-minute version of Let It Be. Because when Marcus gets grumpy, worked up, got to play a song.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be.
Okay, so I poured some tea, and now I had some Let It Be, got some Beatles into my blood. All right, well, you know, now I think it's time to...
It is time for tech news.
Yeah, thank you, robot friend. It is time for tech news. Let's look at some tech news. Not a ton. But Bill English, the computer mouse co-creator, has passed away. The co-creator of the computer mouse, William English, died at age 91. The engineer and inventor was born in 1929 in Kentucky and studied electrical engineering before joining the U.S. Navy. So, sad to hear that, but I just wanted to let you know. Is electricity tech news? I don't know. I think that that's a bit of a stretch there. Sorry, my list of tabs with tech news. I was like, I don't think that's tech news. Let's jump over here. Bam, 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 bam. Doot, doot. The PS4 controllers aren't going to work with PS5 games, Sony said. So, too bad, so sad. I don't know if anybody's buying one of those that listens to midday news, but if you are, sorry, Charlie. Most of this is just business news from tech companies, so sorry, not a whole lot of stuff going on. There's some cool stuff like where is it? Is this programming language just updated? It's called, where'd you go? Yeah, it's not a very informative thing. Whatever. There's not a lot of tech news today. Sorry. It's just the way it is. But I got some, I have a couple of stories that I thought were cool that don't really fit anywhere. And we've only got like 3 minutes to go, so I'm just going to tell you. So a man that was thought dead was found living in the woods 5 years later. Ricardus Puisis, 35, of Wisbeck, Cambridgeshire, was last seen at his workplace in September 2015. No trace of him was found, but in November last year, a Facebook account was set up in his name. Last month, he was found in Wisbeck Wood. Police believe he was hiding to escape the clutches of people who had been exploiting him. He is now being safeguarded, and police investigation is underway. So, glad he's back home. And the last one is a story about pineapples, because I have been thinking about Pineapplebee's for a while. I don't know why. It might be because of the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe coming up in just a couple of minutes right here on and on radio at 1930 UTC. But check this out. So this is from the BBC. But centuries before even the man from Del Monte said yes, the country's must-have accessory graced the table at the very richest aristocrat social gatherings. But the scaly sweet was too valuable to eat. A single fruit was worth thousands of pounds, and often the same pineapple would be paraded from event to event until it eventually went rotten. Later, a roaring trade in pineapple rental developed, where ambitious but less well-off folk might hire one for a special event, dinner party, or even just to jauntily tuck under an arm on a show-off stroll. That's right. By the 1770s, a pineapple of the finest flavor became a phrase used for anything that was the best of the best. It played upon in Sheridan's 1775 play, The Rivals, where when Mrs. Malaprop confuses the word with pinnacle and exclaims, "He is the very pineapple of politeness." In a television adaptation of Jane Austen's unfinished Regency novel, Sandition, Lady Denham's grand luncheon has a pineapple in pride of place, although it is cut to reveal the inside is full of maggots, demonstrating the vast wealth of the character, but also the transitory nature of the status symbol. Wait, what? Sorry, I saw... stop echo on the reverb. I don't know what's going on. It must be because it's time for the committee to start. Oh my gosh, we're just going to call it there. Thank you so much. Here, we're going to play the end sound.
DJ Marcus.
Oh, that was the wrong one. Here it is. Where's the exit movie? They would carry the pineapples around so much that they eventually would rot.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at
7654321. Begin transmission.
It's 8:13 p.m.